Hello and welcome along to the Anxiety Specialist podcast. I'm your host, Michael Burrows.
And I'm Becky Burrows.
If you've been struggling with anxiety or know someone who has been, then this podcast is for you.
Today, we're going to be covering some more tips, strategies, and insights so you can get the anxiety-free life you deserve.
Ready? Let's dive in.
So welcome to the podcast. Carell Richards is a dynamic and creative individual with a wealth of knowledge and experience, having worked in multiple service industries in the last 14 years. One of the biggest lessons she's learned in those years was the importance of mental health and how unhealed trauma can keep you stuck and away from the life you've dreamed of. She is a rapid transformational therapy practitioner and hypnotherapist who is on a mission to help clients with complex childhood trauma break down barriers and release unhealthy habits and patterns to rediscover freedom and peace of mind. Her goal is to get you excited about life again by empowering you with a fresh perspective. Thank you, Carell, for joining me. It's lovely to have you on.
Thank you for having me. It's been a long time, but I'm glad I'm finally here.
Yeah, I'm so excited. I was telling Carell that I got flooded by applications and I've been wading myself through them. But when I came across your application, I was just like, I've got to have you on. I was so excited to have a chat with you and I've got lots of questions. But first off, I'd love to hear your stories. You've got personal experience in what you do. Would you be able to tell us your story and also like how you got through that?
Anxiety has been to my demise, to be honest with you. It has existed for a very, very long time. I'm not afraid to say how old I am, so I'm going to put it out there. I'm 35 years old, and for the longest time, I remember what living with anxiety for all those years felt like. You know, it's, you want to show up as your authentic self, but something just keeps telling you it's not safe. And so for a very long time, I felt very unsafe, very alone in this world, because I always knew I was different, not because of the color of my skin, not because of anything external, but just how I showed up in this world. I was very expressive, and you can probably tell throughout the entire interview, I'm very expressive. I have really different ways of thinking. So when I would say something to the adults in my life, I was too smart for them in their way. So it would be, okay, I need to quiet Carell. And you trying to quiet me put me in a space where I felt so closed off, just felt so rejected. And in feeling so rejected, anxiety just came about, because you always just seem to question if what I'm about to say, if it will be accepted, if I will be accepted. And that was just the theme of my life until I would say 5 years ago, when I decided, okay, I have to do something about it. Where is this coming from was my first question. What can I do about it? Because this isn't me. I know I have a bigger purpose in this world. How can I start stepping into that purpose?
Yeah, stepping into your purpose.
Yes.
Being on our podcast.
Yes.
It's so interesting hearing what you're saying, because I feel a kindred spirit in terms of the very expressive. That's just kind of how I come across. You can always tell how I'm feeling because my face tells no lies. As a child, had a lot of your too much, you know.
Yeah.
It's interesting connecting with somebody else who had that experience and that feeling like you need to hold yourself back from.
Exactly.
Because of your natural self not coming, being something that people are really accepting of or embracing. Even if they kind of accept it, that's not the embracing it and like, we think this is wonderful about you.
Yeah.
So that's really interesting. Hearing you say that really resonated. And so I'd love to hear, so you had this anxiety and this holding you back. What sort of things did you do to start working through that anxiety?
The first thing I did was to accept it, right? And I think that's where a lot of us stray away from it. It's like, oh, we have to fight this. There's something wrong with just saying I have anxiety, so I'm going to hide it. And I think that's what makes it harder, is when you don't accept it. I had to accept that this was something that was happening. I remember being in an exam and I was doing so well writing. And in the middle of the exam, I experienced a panic attack. And that's what panic attacks do. They come about at the weirdest times. And I'm like, why? And when I did a little introspection, of course, years later, I realized that I had so many expectations. My parents, I just thought, okay, if I don't do well, then, you know, they're not going to think I'm worthy. And I didn't think I was worthy. So it was just, you know, looking to pleasing everybody else. And even though I was doing well, subconsciously, something was saying that if you fail, they're not going to love you anymore. And even though I know that that isn't true, as the adult that I am today, that 12-year-old, that 13-year-old was just like, okay, if I fail, this was the experience before, so I have to make sure I don't fail. And it just got in the way of me even just writing an exam. And I was like, you know what? I have to accept this, because the first initial thought isn't to accept it. The first initial thought is to reject it, to avoid the things that cause the anxiety, not realizing that you're stopping yourself from actually living and doing things that you enjoy. And I wasn't alive for too long. I had to just accept it, one, and just lean into it to find out where it was coming from and what was happening beneath it. And that's how I'm here today, actually having these conversations, because I started to accept myself.
Yeah, that acceptance piece, it's like it's creating firm ground. I wonder how much of the lack of acceptance of our anxiety is the fear that if we acknowledge it, then there's nothing we can do about it. But actually, there's nothing we can do about it until we accept it.
Yeah.
And then once you accept it, it's like firm footing to then step forward. And it's interesting how your level of acceptance as well is then making you able to share that with other people.
Absolutely.
To create awareness.
Yeah, without shame, without guilt, because I think that's the part, is you think that you're broken. The thing is, living in Jamaica, because I'm originally from Jamaica, I didn't even know what anxiety was. I just knew I was experiencing. I couldn't breathe. My palms were sweating. I couldn't think straight. My whole body was tingling and I had no control. It just, you felt so powerless. And it got to the point as well where it started to manifest itself into other things. So I remember suffering from hyperhidrosis, which is excessive sweating. And for me, it wasn't in my armpits. So anytime I would feel unsafe, I would start sweating. And even if it was cold, I would still be sweating. And it's after actually doing a couple of sessions, I recognized that it's because I felt unsafe in this world. And this is the one thing, and our minds are so powerful in my mind, to keep safe would be to sweat, because nobody would then touch me. Everybody would want to stay away from me. But do you really want people to stay away from you?
It's that reactions that we have with anxiety can make sense in the context of like predators. So it's like we want to keep the predator away. So if we smell a certain way, then the predator will stay away, be less, maybe potentially less attracted to us. Like they're freezing up, they won't see us.
Yeah.
In modern day life, anxiety is so frustratingly unhelpful, and it's like, this is not what I need right now. I know you're trying to help, but this is not what I need right now.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's it. When we made the decision, because I made the decision when I was 7, that sweating is the way to go about it, because if I sweat, people will stay away, and that means I'll be safe. So when it's happening to me when I'm in high school, it's embarrassing, because I'm like, I have on my uniform and all I can see are these sweat stains. And I'm like, there's no reason for me to be sweating, and people are making fun. And you mentioned the smell. And I'm just like, why is this happening? Not realizing that I created this as a way of protecting myself. And instead of it protecting me, now it's actually hindering me.
Oh, that's so hard.
Yeah.
I want to come back to the bit you said about how in Jamaica, you'd never even really heard about anxiety. And that must have made it even more scary, because then you're like, what the heck is going on?
Yeah. Like I said, it manifested into the sweating. I remember my mother taking me to a lot of doctors to find out what was going on with me, because she didn't know anybody else that was experiencing excessive sweating. And so she took me to the dermatologist and they did their check and they told me, oh, I have hyperhidrosis. But I'm like, okay, well, what is that and what can we do about it? You know, and then they recommended Certain Dry, the deodorant, but the Certain Dry would just burn. It would literally burn my skin. And I was like, well, now I'm suffering. Yes, I stopped sweating, but my armpits are burning me. And then it'll start up again, because it's like, okay, well, I need to keep you safe. So even though it's burning, I'm going to still sweat. So it no longer works. Yeah, I don't think anybody really knew what was happening beneath the surface. And I think a lot of people don't recognize how strong our minds are as children, because ultimately your mind wants to protect you. So anything you tell it, it's going to do, not realizing that it may not be a logical statement, but it just wants to keep you safe nonetheless. So I think the reason that I'm being pointed in this direction in terms of my purpose is because a lot of people don't realize the very thing that I didn't realize, and my parents didn't recognize, and the dermatologist didn't recognize. And it's bringing that to the surface to be like, it's not just the symptom. There are actually things happening at the root of that issue.
Yeah. And the power, that power of that awareness, once you know what you're dealing with, that's half the battle, isn't it? Is just knowing what you're dealing with.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's still even tough, like having all of this awareness that I have, it's sometimes so hard to live in this world because I'm like, okay, this is a little weird that I can look at someone, they tell me one statement, and I'm already able to tell them what's going on beneath it. But I've accepted it. It's a gift. So why throw that gift away? So I'm going to just lean into my gift. And however it manifests, it will.
And help those people who want the awareness.
Exactly.
Because not everyone does. Oh, no, not everyone's quite at that place yet. But for the people who do want that awareness, it can be life-changing when
exactly
finally know what's going on.
Oh, yeah. And that's the thing. They're so surprised. I'll go through these sessions, these rapid transformational sessions, because we use hypnotherapy. So it's a mixture of cognitive behavioral therapy, neuro-linguistic programming, psychotherapy, and hypnotherapy. And by the end of the session, when you realize what scene is coming up for you and what interpretation you had of that scene that is behind the anxiety, you're like, well, goddamn, I only thought that happened. Yeah, I didn't know that I created a belief because of those scenes. And that's where the power comes from, is having the understanding, you know, of how you were able to interpret it and what meaning you gave to it and how it's actually impacting your life. You make that really, I would say, rapid decision to be like, okay, I'm letting this go because this makes absolutely no sense.
This is that sort of trauma piece as well.
Yes.
It's interesting how one of the problems with trauma, and I'd be interested to see if this is something you experience as well in your work, that one of the problems with trauma is the meaning we make about ourselves as well.
Yeah.
When we, in those situations, it's the, what do I need to do to keep myself safe sort of meaning we make out of it. Oh, I need to do this thing now. And it's that, what does this mean about me? What does this say about me, about my safety in the world, about my worthiness, that side of things?
Absolutely. You are absolutely correct. And that is how it translates. It's not about everybody else, because as children, we come into this world, and I say this very nicely, we're very narcissistic as children. Everything is about us, you know, and it's not, I would say it's in a bad way. That's how we were programmed coming into this world. We're not thinking, oh, we don't have logics until we're about 8. So everything before that, we're like, it's mine. That's about me. However, something shows up, it's because of me. So we honestly can't help it. So a lot of people are walking around with a lot of beliefs right now about themselves that didn't have anything to do with them. You know, they saw their parents arguing and they're arguing because I did something wrong, or it's because of me that they're arguing and I'm unworthy, I'm unsafe. And all of these beliefs just kind of floating through their minds that really had nothing to do with them.
Is that complex childhood trauma piece?
Yeah. What makes it complex is not that it's a one-off situation. It's continuous, you know, situations, continuous experiences, continuous events that keep reiterating, keep reinforcing that belief. So take for me, for instance, when I was 2, my dad left to go to the States. And now I know that he was leaving to provide a better life for us. But at the time, I thought he was leaving because he didn't love me anymore and I felt rejected. And then I had other experiences with my mother that would further reinforce why I am being rejected. So for years, I walked through this world thinking that everything that was happening to me or for me was because it was a way for me to feel rejected. And I just had to change the way that I perceived life to no longer think that everything that was happening outside of me was about me. And that is when I was able to actually heal that wound. And I'm still healing it even to this day, because it is a journey. Don't think because you go to your therapist or your practitioner that they are completely healed. Trust me, if anything, we have probably the most issues that we are working through, and some aren't. And I'm going to be honest, some of us are not.
Yes, I think that's one of the things that I'm real big on with therapists is that they're doing their own work, that they've got some insight into their own stuff, and they're working on themselves and their works in progress as well. And hopefully they're a bit ahead of where you're at. There's therapists who are like, nope, I don't have any anxiety and I don't have any of these. I help other people. But and it's just like, well, yeah. Yes.
I'm telling you, and I say this as practitioners, we have to own what our stuff is, because we don't even understand that is a gateway for clients to feel a little bit more even safe, a little bit more comfortable to know that, oh, even a therapist, even a practitioner has wounds, because we all have trauma. If we stop telling lies to ourselves, then maybe our clients will stop lying to us as well.
Amen. Amen. Especially we all have trauma. We all have events in our life that have shaped us and generally made these unhelpful meanings and unhelpful beliefs. And the more we can acknowledge that and stop categorizing, sort of like, oh, is my trauma valid enough to do something about it? It's like, is it affecting how you see yourself and how you'd show up in the world? Then
exactly.
Hell yeah, it is. Totally. I find that it's so helpful when things come up and you realize that there's a bit of a trauma to start to do some work to work through it, because shifting those messages and meanings can make such a difference in how we experience life.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it was Rami that says it's through the wound that, you know, the light enters. Like if you don't acknowledge the wound, there's no way that you're going to, I would say, heal that wound, one, and there's no way for you to actually show up as the better version of you. You pretending that it doesn't exist, you are actually lying to yourself. You're actually rejecting yourself over and over. So I think it's, in all honesty, it's better for you to just go through it. And I know it's tough. I know it's painful. And I know it'll probably stop you in your tracks to be like, okay, maybe I'm not as good as a therapist. And you don't even know that on the other side of that, it makes you so much better at what you do, because you have gone through it and you know what your client is in fact experiencing.
Yes. There's that empathy piece. And then there's also the deeper understanding of that work and how to walk someone else through that. It's like having walked a journey and then showing that same path to somebody else.
Yeah, and it gives you that authentic compassion. It's not just, oh, I know what you're going through. You actually know what that person is going through. So it doesn't just feel like a statement. It actually feels real and genuine. Mm,
yes. What you're talking about and how you're talking, it's interesting because I feel there's a purpose piece that comes out of it as well. As you do that work, it sort of feeds into your purpose and how you help people. And I found it really interesting because I went myself, because I've went through years of severe depression and intense anxiety. Panic was one of my struggles as well. And working through that is how I got into doing what I do now in terms of helping people. And it's like the interesting thing of that suffering, if we can go through it, we can work through it, it can even transition into purpose and a deeper purpose. For a long time, I was like, I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing with my life and how I'm supposed to be contributing to the world.
Yeah.
And now it's just like, this is the thing. This is helping other people with anxiety is the thing.
Yeah.
Do you relate to that? Is that your experience?
Absolutely. When I started out, it was because I was able to find a way, a strategy, a technique to get myself through it. And it was me going through it myself where I was able to give advice, because I was like, well, I've experienced this. So I'm not just telling you based on what I've read or what I've researched. I'm telling you what actually worked for me. And I show up with those scars. It's something that, strangely enough, years ago, I was told, like, I don't know if it was an intuitive guidance. They were just like, just show up with your scars and things will happen. Like the longer you hide your scars is you actually robbing yourself as well as others from actually seeing that it is possible to get through it. I know with anxiety, you feel like this is a lifelong experience and you're never going to get through it. But just by starting, just by acknowledging, it gets so much easier and there's no more shame attached to it. Because to say, oh, I'm having a panic attack, you think people are looking at you like you're a weirdo. And to me, I love the idea of being a weirdo. That means I'm different.
I think that's one of the things I love about you too. I was like, fellow weirdo, yes.
Why not? You know, that's my special programming, my special place in this world, is being a weirdo, and I'm okay with that. So that's how I was able to release the shame and the guilt. So I'm like, I'm not supposed to be like this until I turned it into, this is who I am, and I'm going to accept me. And once I start to accept me, everybody else will. And the anxiety just started to just disappear. It happens every now and again, but now I talk to it like a friend. I'm like, okay, so if you had a voice, what are you telling me right now? And it tells me, okay, well, you're somewhere you're not supposed to be. And I'm like, okay, I'm out. You know, it's telling you, okay, you're telling yourself something right now that isn't true. And I'm like, okay, what am I telling myself? And then I reframe it, change, you know, the story that I'm telling myself, because your anxiety really starts with the story that you're telling yourself, that thought process that you have. So if you recognize that you're feeling anxious, question, what am I telling myself right now that isn't true? What is around you is reality, not what you're telling yourself. So, you know, speak to yourself. I know they think it's crazy to talk to yourself, but it isn't.
We do it all the time. That's what we're doing in our heads all the time. Sometimes it's just helpful to verbalize it.
Yeah, that's okay. That is okay.
It's interesting that I love what you said. I just want to jump onto the story you're telling yourself. I've been listening to Brené Brown recently, and she talks quite a bit. Do you like Brené?
Absolutely.
She's brilliant. Anyway, little love for Brené there. So she talks about that story and owning your stories. And we act as if certain things are just hard facts, when actually they're just stories that we're telling ourselves when we are actually lacking the information. We don't have enough information to know if that is actually fact, or we're making a prediction and we don't know if that's actually what's going to happen. And so when we can start even using the wording, this is a story I'm telling myself, it takes away that omniscient power that we almost give ourselves of like, I know all. And so I should be anxious about this because I can predict the future. And it's like,
yeah,
really? Really? And do you know everything about the situation, or is this the unhelpful story you're telling yourself that's actually getting in the way of you experiencing life better? I'm really interested to jump in about one of your last posts that I saw on Instagram, where you talked about loneliness. I really want to actually have a chat now to you about loneliness. So Carell had this really cool post on Instagram, and she was talking about loneliness. And one of the things you were talking about is how loneliness is an internal thing. Can you tell us more about that? Can we go into that? Because I think this feeds into what we've been talking about.
It's so funny you asked me about that, because for the last couple of days, I've been doing a bit of introspection as it relates to feelings, because we came into this world as feelings individuals, just feelings and sensation, until, you know, like I said, about 8 or so, logic plays a role. So even before I jump into loneliness, I wanted to give you some backstory as it relates to that. There are times where trauma will actually affect how you interpret those feelings, right? So for me, there was a time where I interpreted a feeling of boredom to mean peace of mind, or even the reverse. I used to think, oh my God, I'm so bored, not recognizing that this boredom that I'm speaking of is actually peace of mind, because I've always been in such a chaotic environment. So when it wasn't chaotic, it's like it's boredom. And I had to question that. Even when I made the post of loneliness, it was something that kind of just woke me up out of my sleep. And I said to myself, okay, what really is loneliness? And that's kind of how I started the video. It is internal, because these are feelings that we are having. Like, nobody can tell me, nobody can indicate to me that I'm supposed to feel lonely, right? I just feel it. You then question, okay, what am I telling myself? What am I experiencing to get me to say that I'm lonely? Now, I have seen where you have people in your life, like they have a group of people with them, and for whatever reason, they decide to end their lives. We get so dumbfounded by it, because we're like, they have so many people around them. Why would they want to end their life? Not realizing that if you aren't showing up as you, like the authentic version of you, it doesn't get to come from, you know, beneath the surface, then nobody gets to see that. And if nobody gets to see that, they don't get to embrace the joy, the beauty that is you, because they don't get to experience that. So it's almost like you are actually working against yourself when you don't show up as you, because then you don't get to get the love and appreciation that you deserve, because it's not coming to the surface and people won't understand you. And that's when I ended with the question, do you even understand yourself? Do you even understand why you came into the world the way that you did? And why you had some of the experiences that you did? And what was the lesson that you should have probably learned that you didn't? And instead, you walk around with a mask. In walking around with that mask, that forces you to feel lonely because nobody's getting to see you.
It really hit me when you talked about that you could be surrounded by people and still feel lonely, because I think sometimes in the most crowded places, we can feel the most lonely. The mass of humanity, no one seeing our authentic selves, and how much of that is us holding it back. Like, we create our own loneliness by not showing up as ourselves. There's this, almost this block. I feel like the block between showing up as our authentic self is that we're scared that we'll be rejected for being our authentic self. But we're not, because we're already experiencing the thing we're trying to avoid, because we feel lonely, because we feel people, no one knows us.
Yeah. But here's the caveat. Here's the caveat to that. We're afraid that people are going to reject us when we show up as our authentic self. But when we choose not to, we are rejecting ourselves. So somewhere there's some rejection happening. So I'm like, would I want to reject myself? No. So if someone else rejects me, then that's not my problem. That's them not being able to accept probably parts of themselves that they're just not ready to deal with. So for instance, there's a couple of people I've been around lately that they feel like they're too much, like you said earlier. And I've now said to myself, if I grow on a set of people and they tell me I'm too much, what I'm hearing from them is that they don't have the tools to handle someone like me. And that's not my problem, right? What are parts of me that's showing up that they aren't really at this point ready to deal with? They don't have the tools to maneuver through it. And that's not a judgment. It's just saying, oh, I'm not taking this personally because I love myself. I love how I show up. I love these parts of me. So if it's not acceptable to you, that's okay, because it's acceptable to me.
That self-acceptance piece, that being loving and accepting ourselves, our full selves, our authentic selves first, and then it's so much more meaningful when other people accept that as well.
Because it's the real you. It's the real you.
That's the antidote to loneliness.
Yeah. Because you don't feel alone with yourself. Because, you know, there are a lot of people who are just like, oh, I can't be by myself. If you can't be by yourself, then why should anybody else want to be with you?
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. That's great.
It seems logical to me. Like, why? I have to love my company first before I will expect anybody else to love my company.
Yep. The painful truth, eh?
It is.
Oh my gosh, I love that. But yeah, it's finding those things to love about yourself as well.
Yeah.
And it's like, I wonder how much sort of the social media veneers that we are creating in our society and choose to create in magazines and images and all these things that you can get so close to perfection with.
Yeah.
That we kind of feel like the things people love is perfection, but actually sometimes it's the less perfect, messy.
Yeah.
It's real. It's so much more relatable. And it's really interesting. I think as someone who for a long time didn't want to fail.
Yeah.
As well, like you were talking about earlier, scared of failing, felt like I needed to do things right and needed to do them the right the first time.
Yeah.
Trying to be perfect or having this veneer of perfection that actually kept other people away because they're like, oh, I can't relate to her at all. Like, where's the imperfections? Where's the humanity? And then it's been really interesting how I went through the mental health sort of side of things and a crumbling and a very public in terms of family to start with, and then now very publicly open about my experience. And there's a relatable piece now, a connecting piece on being able to be like, actually, I never had it all together. So one of the things that I've noticed that is different is that I realize that I have this value of growth, and actually you can't grow unless you make mistakes. And growth is not a perfection thing, because perfection is that idea of complete stays the same, never changes, kind of like that crystal monolith, opposed to a tree that starts out in the mud, that's just a seed, and then it's just a leaf, and then it's trying to, like, in winter it loses all its leaves potentially, and it's just kind of like there's sticks just standing there being like, I know I'm not doing anything right now, but you just wait and see till springtime sort of thing. It's such a process. And when you get stuck in that, trying to create this perfect image, you lose the growth in the process. And I felt so out of alignment with my values when I realized my value was growth. And then also my other value is connection. And so if I'm trying to do that, oh my gosh, yeah. So,
yeah.
No wonder we jive. Okay. So if you try and have that perfect veneer, I couldn't live into any of my values because I couldn't connect with others because they're not seeing the authentic me. I wasn't allowing myself to be me. And I'm not growing because I'm just like trying to hold a pose of perfection rather than actually just messing through it. And so leaning into that messy, liking myself, that's my growing edge. And even at the moment, thinking, leaning into that, the messy and the growth. And being able to show up authentically as yourself is so much more meaningful when people actually do connect with you because they're connecting with you, with who you are.
Yeah, and that's the true connection. You know, everything else before wasn't. It was just you existing and you're just kind of floating by and you get to interact with them, but it's not really meaningful because you're not really feeling anything because it's not even you. So I think that's the component for me. I recognize that I wasn't connecting with people. And that's the thing. They said, oh, you have it together. I'm like, who are they talking about?
Who is this person they're talking about?
What do I have together?
Do they know me? Apparently not.
Who are they talking about? You know, so, and I didn't even want to reject it. That's the thing. I didn't want to reject their opinion because I do believe that the people that I meet are a reflection of me, essentially. And how I receive it, how I interpret that, really is up to me. So I'm like, okay, if someone says to me they think I always have it together, I'm like, okay, it almost forces me to question, do I show up authentically with this person? Because you could show up authentically with one person, but not necessarily showing up authentically with another. So I'm like, okay, well, is this friendship relationship even worth it? But the relationship that I have with myself is what's worth it. So if I am not showing up, then I'm rejecting myself and I don't want to reject myself anymore. So, you know, it's a day-to-day journey. I won't get it right all the time and I'm okay with that. You know, I speak kindly to myself. No. Before I was a little self-critical.
Lies.
Not a little, a lot.
A little bit, yeah. The kindness, it keeps coming up in this podcast. If you've listened to other interviews, I feel like the universe is trying to talk to me about, God and the universe are trying to tell me about kindness. It's like, you know that kindness piece? Yeah, when you're going to do more of that, you can lean even harder into that one. Yeah.
It's definitely a journey. And I think, honestly, that's a part of my purpose is learning to be compassionate. Learning to be kind. And it starts with me. So when I recognize I'm being brutal with someone else, I'm like, oh, okay, what's going on here? Where is it within me that I'm not kind to myself as it relates to this kind of topic? Like, there's something about, and this is me being transparent, there's something about someone that's stuck in victimhood. It sets me off. And I'm like, it's time for you to wake up. You know, and then I'm like, oh, Carol, remember, they're on their own journey. You can't be out here projecting like they need to get it together. But I recognize the reasoning behind that was that I didn't give myself the chance, you know, to go through what I went through. It was just like, oh, you need to get it together. Not realizing that it takes time and I have to give myself some time to go through it. It's not an overnight success. Like this whole traumatic experience that I've had, you know, in my younger years or however I perceived it, it's going to take just as much time for me to get back to who I am authentically. So every day I'm taking steps to just get closer and closer to that version. And whenever I get there, I'll be celebrating either way. I'm celebrating every day that I do something different.
I love that. One of the things I really love about what you're talking about is taking interactions with other people as information. Information about them, but largely information about ourselves. About like how you're showing up and what you are struggling with that you're projecting onto other people and kind of maybe being quite harsh with them when actually that's something you're being really harsh with yourself. That's something you need to be thinking about. I love that insight which you're getting from your day-to-day experiences. I think that's really powerful when we can step back and go, okay, wait a minute, what is this really about? Is this about them or is this something that I need to think about and work on? And I really love that. I'm just looking, had to look at where we're up to time-wise, and I know Michael has to get to work, and I could talk to you all day. Oh my gosh. I still got questions that I would really like to ask you, but I think we'll have to maybe finish up very shortly. I think really want to just know, like, if people want to work with you, connect with you, how can they best do that? How can they be involved in what you're doing?
The best way to communicate with me really is to book a consult. It's indivinetime.com, and I'll spell it out because it's very peculiar, as I would say. So it's indivinetheme.com. Book your consult. It's free. The first consult is free. So we'll be able to discuss whether or not I am a good fit for you. And that's the one thing that I want to mention is, with therapy, find who works with you and on an individual basis. I can't help everybody. My personality won't mesh with everybody, and I'm okay with that. So it's for you, it's your responsibility to make sure you find someone that works with you and how you are and the direction that you want to see yourself going.
Awesome. That's really cool. I'd also really recommend you check out Corral's Instagram, because that's great. So can you give them, what's your Instagram handle?
Sure. It's also In Divine Time. And look out for more content. Right now, I'm taking slowly but surely. I'm very intentional about the content that I put out, because like I was telling you with that loneliness video, it really just woke me up out of my sleep and was like, you need to go do this video. So when I get those little hunches, I do a video.
Well, I'm really glad you did that, because that was the thing that as soon as I watched that, I was like, yeah, that's the person I want to talk to. So maybe it was me. But thank you so much, Carl. This has just been so great to connect with you and to talk about your experience and about trauma and working through that. And I loved being able to connect on this loneliness piece as well, because I think so many people walk through life lonely, not realizing the way that they are showing up is impacting on them being able to access that connection. So thank you so much. Awesome.
You're welcome, man. Here's me giving you some insight. If you want to do a part two, I'm open to it.
I think we will have to. All right. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Anxiety Specialist podcast. That's it for this week's episode. If you found this episode helpful, make sure to click the follow button and please do share this with your family and friends. And don't forget to follow us on Facebook or Instagram. That's at Anxiety Specialists. And if you're interested to learn how you can live an anxiety-free life, you can get our epic Anxiety Reducer Guide absolutely free, so you can get started right away on getting your anxiety back down. Just grab the link in the show notes. Feel free to message us and let us know what you'd like to learn next. I am your host, Michael Burrows.
And I'm Becky Burrows.
And we're going to be back next week with more tips, strategies, and insights so you can get the anxiety-free life you deserve.